help out if we possibly could.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask another question, sir, again?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I'd like to address to our esteemed and even modern speaker.
We have a translator. Do you want
to
come on?
No, that's all right. I'll speak in English, but if he needs to, I'll speak to him in Russian. I was born there. Thank you. This is my question. My name is Orest Maker. I'm a human factors engineer. I'm Naval Ship Systems Command, and I'd like to speak as a human factors engineer. Everything we speak about here is electrical engineering because, I don't want to be facetious, but all matter, including sewage, is composed of electrons, and so is the electrical machinery. Therefore, this is an electrical discussion. As our electrical machinery has been developed, I'm still making the question, as we have developed electrical machinery and the various electronic devices, we also have created market for them. We train people to use those things effectively. I wonder if the problem that we are facing today now isn't one of just that, training for the new world, for the utilization of the new kinds of electrical and electronic machinery, where we need people who know how to live in these new housing projects. I live in Washington, and I live right on the edge of a ghetto which is only 3 years old. And if you don't know what made that ghetto, then when are we going to start learning it? I believe that in our urban development problems, in our electrical engineering design, in our electronic development, it is also very important for us to consider the user, the customer, the operator, the maintainer. We have to train people to use, live, and enjoy, and to operate that new equipment, that new housing development effectively. And I'd like to know what would Professor Sivarov say, what are his observations? Or does he have any comments to make on this subject?
Когда мы развили электрические машины, которые мы теперь имеем, мы научили людей, как эти употреблять эти машины. И, по-моему, я считаю, что у всех наших новых развитий, которые мы делаем, необходимо также думать о том, как надо развить людей, чтобы они могли употреблять эти машины, эти новые здания, эти новые проекты. Что вы об этом
говорите? По абзацам переводить. Уже в настоящее время вычислительные машины находят себе применение в самых разнообразных областях.
Already at present, computers find application in many different fields.
И эти области применения в будущем все больше и больше будут расширяться.
And in future, these fields will expand more and more.
И я думаю, что та проблема, которая была только что сформулирована, то есть проблема общения человека с машиной, она очень актуальна.
And it's my opinion that the problem just formulated, that's the problem of interaction between computer and a man, is very important now.
В частности, в институте, где я работаю, то есть в институте проблем передачи информации, производились вот такие эксперименты.
And in particular, at my institute, such experiments were conducted.
Обычно связь человека с машиной осуществляется через перфоленты или перфокарты.
Usually, the interaction of man and computer is being made through the medium of perforated cards.
Мы проводили эксперименты, имеющие целью заставить работать машину непосредственно с голоса.
We conducted experiments having a goal to make machine work immediately from the voice of the man.
И первые эксперименты дали такие обнадеживающие результаты.
And the first experiments were very encouraging.
В частности, вот решение этой проблемы связано с распознаванием образов в виде слов, звуков.
And in particular, the solution of this problem is connected with pattern recognition, such patterns as words and voices.
Это только один из аспектов этой проблемы.
This is only one of the aspects of the problem.
И мне думается, что очень многие направления, которые вот здесь, в Соединенных Штатах, быстро развиваются, в частности, работа таймшеринг, тоже очень интересная.
And it seems to me that many aspects of the problem, which are being developed here at the United, in the United States, are very interesting.
В моей стране тоже имеется в виду широко и широкое использование, оно уже имеет место и сейчас, не только единичных отдельных машин, но и систем машин, связанных между собой.
And in my country, we also try to use not isolated computers, but systems of computers interconnected with each other.
Мы придаем очень большое значение глобальным иерархическим системам.
We pay much attention to I'm not specialist in computers, to global hierarchic systems. I don't know. Probably you'll help me. What's that?
Step control, you know, the step automatic control in steps, right? Hierarchical structure of the automatic control.
Probably my field is lasers. It's just this example illustrates how far one field is from the other.
В частности, в прошлом году.
And in particular, last year,
на конференции в Вене,
at a conference in Wien,
посвященной использованию космического пространства,
at which the use of cosmos was of space, space. Yes, mm-hmm. of cosmic space was considered.
Было внесено предложение и Советским Союзом. И многие другие страны внесли предложение в Организацию Объединенных Наций.
There was a move by Soviet Union and many other countries, which also was in the United, was made in the United Nations.
Организовать систему Интерспутник.
To organize a system called International Satellites.
Вот это тоже один из аспектов создания такой глобальной системы в масштабе нашей планеты.
This is also one of the aspects of creating a global system around our world.
И мне думается, что вот эти глобальные системы, они должны непрерывно развиваться.
And it seems to me that these global systems have to develop continuously.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, sir, back here in the aisle. Your hand up, yes.
Harry Cochran from Data Systems Division, IBM. I'd like to ask Mr. Rogers a question. With regard to urban development, what incentives, other than have been given to date, could we expect to get the type of people? Another thing, the consensus of opinion has been that large systems people would be an asset to this field, and they come rather high. Is there any incentives to get these people in to the urban development?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I didn't understand your question.
When you spoke, you mentioned that large systems development, the training there, was akin to the requirements to solve many of the urban problems. Now, I wonder whether or not there has been any incentives coming forth to get this type of person into your organization.
Did you get it all right?
Yes. As far as information systems are concerned, there are. You must understand that my own department is very new and very small. Our total research and development activity, for which that's the only part that I can speak with confidence, has some 20 to 30 professionals at this point, and we are asking for $25 million of general research activity. Now, in the area of information systems, we are beginning to hit very hard on that. I would hope that we do have one or two people on the staff that are concerned with ADP as it applies to urban management systems, not so much planning. And at the moment, we are working very closely with two or three other federal departments and agencies to see if we can come to a conclusion to pool our funds and pick out two or three cities of various sizes and get up to some critical level of development activity in those cities. Now, if all works out as we hope, I won't go to say so far as to say trust, because there are very many impediments to this. The authorizations for the different departments are different. The amounts of money we have are small. The question of which cities to be selected is always a sensitive one, and so on. But it is our goal over the next few years to single out a few cities and go in, we hope, to an environment in which the elected and appointed officials will embrace the notion of trying development tests, and then through contracts, probably with private industry, to bring in hardware and software and to begin to develop some very basic confidence on the urban scene.
Yes.
My name is Carl Barris. I teach electrical engineering at Swarthmore College. We've been told that an engineer is someone who can make something and sell it that can be sold at a profit. Yet I think most of the speakers have been telling us that the profit motive is not adequate to solve the major problems of the cities that we face today. Unless then we have some sort of a revolutionary alteration of our priority in this country, in our goals of where we're going to put our money, just where is the money going to come from to solve these engineering problems? Where, for example, is the $20 billion that Mr. Rogers spoke of?
Sam.
Well, since I spoke of it, I suppose I'm expected to elaborate upon it. I know as well as you where it's coming from. Let's talk about our money in two different categories. First, let's say large-scale production, be this for goods or services. It's just a very, very simple fact that the cities of the country, particularly the medium-sized and large ones, but not they alone, simply do not have the resources available to them in funds and manpower and institutional arrangements. But to talk about money, they just don't have the monies available to them. Now, it's up to all of us to conclude as to whether or not the country as a country has the resources available to it, and in the light of all of the other demands on the gross national product, conclude as to whether or not the money is being properly internally allocated. I think that you can still have a merging or a melding of the profit motive and a directed social conscience or some other conscience. There are industries in this country that do receive marked federal support, and you might note that there is a debate in the country now involving something called a supersonic transport that's being looked at from any one of a number of points of view, not the least of which will be the federal support of such activities. Now, in the one area that I do know the most about, the R&D area, I would say that we're at about this part of the curve. I think maybe this year or next we'll break the stiction and begin to see a true positive going slope. But again, I would speak to you partly as scientists and engineers, but also as citizens and taxpayers and residents, and say that there are two problems that I face going up the hill and asking for more R&D money, in addition to the zero-order one of money is a very difficult commodity to come by for anything today. The first is the question of relevance. Now, that's one that I haven't had to face for 20 years. Science is good. You all know this. Engineering is at least as good. You all know this. But when you march up the hill now to talk to people who make the appropriations decisions on urban-related R&D, their first question is, why do you want to do research and development on the urban scene? Why do you want to do... Everybody knows how to build a house or have one built for him and so on and so forth. We're back to having to explain again to a new audience in a new field, under stress, why we're important to them. Very, very poignant matter, I might say, and one which I shared with the Department of the Academy of Science and Engineering when they put together some groups to make a study for our R&D strategy. The other question, beyond that of fundamental relevance, is, well then, we are putting some $16 or $18 billion of dollars into RDT&E federal funds annually, space, defense. Why can't you derive the results from this? And what we have failed to this point to explain, in my judgment, what I have failed to explain satisfactorily to this point, is that basic research, if it's good for anybody, is probably good for everybody. And applied research is good if it's good for anybody, for most everybody. But development and engineering and test must be directed to specific problems. And it will be, by far, in my judgment, the exception rather than the rule that we will find hardware or even software falling directly out of these other program areas that will apply to urban problems. Now, that's a very long answer to a reasonably straightforward question, but it's a tough one.
Well, Tom, I think tends to get a little discouraged, and I'm sure justifiably so, at the speed with which he's making progress in getting his share of the resources. Some of us that are used to having a lot of money lying around wonder how things can be as tight that there's only $20 or $25 million available for research in areas that are as important as the ones he deals with. Just as a basis of comparison, for example, the Air Force spent $10 million on housing research in the last year, and it's very hard for his department to get 25, and his is the Department of Housing. But I think this educational process is something which has to take place at all levels. It has to take place on the individual level and on the governmental level. And it's true, I think the mood in Congress has changed from saying that R&D is good to saying that we're probably spending too much there, and therefore you have to justify your case a lot better. I certainly know that's happening in defense from the way I spent my morning. But I think that he should not be discouraged. After all, to have a problem identified and then to get any action at all out of the federal government in a matter of 2 years is pretty good. And he should be more encouraged by the slope of his curve than by the fact that it's still near zero.
Thank you, John.
Yes, there's a question back here.
My name is Clarence Prince, and I teach electrical engineering at Lafayette College. There's one thing that concerns me a little bit about our discussion this afternoon, and I just want to bring it out. I know that we are all well aware of the problem that I want to raise, but nothing is said about it. And in order to balance the discussion, I did want to call us to remember that all of our problems are not confined to the boundaries of the United States, that the world's serious problems that the problems are worldwide, and I'm specifically referring to the problems of the developing nations. Yes, we have problems here in this country, but they're raised in many cases to the nth degree in the nations of the lower two-thirds of the world. And as we talk about engineers' social responsibility, I would simply put in a word for not only the domestic side of the problem, but also the international side of the problem, and that here is, I'm sure, where the future of the engineering profession will have to be intimately involved for the next 100 years, if not more.
Somebody have a comment, or if not?
Yes. Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask Mr. Rogers how he would propose to achieve this blending of the profit motive and social values. Specifically, I was wondering if he could figure a way to blend the social values with the profit motive to induce Detroit to marketing a safe automobile.
Gee.
It's a good place to stop.
Let me respond with an example, but from my own field of recent concern, that of housing. I'm not much for automobiles. An example, what is the problem? The problem is that an industry that could produce housing finds that the housing that it can produce, given our present given the present state of the art and the costs of materials and services and so on, is a product which it cannot sell to a person making, say, $5,000 a year without placing an enormous burden, a financial demand on that family's purse. As a rule of thumb, we would say that if a family pays 25% of its income for housing, that's not an unreasonable upper bound. So you can work the arithmetic out yourself at present interest rates and so on, and come to the conclusion that if a house costs more than a certain amount of money, probably these people can't afford it. On the other hand, that industry can't, out of charity, build these houses by itself. A company cannot, and simply give it to the people, nor can it wait, say, for a decade or two in anticipation that the economic level of that family would rise and they could then put back in. So a reason, because they are responsible to the stockholders and so on. What the federal government or the local government can do, and the state, some states do this, is to supplement, let's say, the income of the people. There is a rent supplement program that will allow the people, with a small grant making up the difference between what they can afford and 25% to pay for the house that the man can build and sell at a reasonable profit. Also, there are federal programs that will allow that man or the mortgager to borrow money at well below market interest rates and therefore bring the payment down. That's the sort of thing that I mean, where that I have in mind when I say you can retain the profit motive. You can expect that industry to pay more particular attention to a market that could be met if other people also would help. And the other people, I think, must be the federal government or the state governments.
Yes, sir.
My name is Marlon Ristenbat, and I'm in the sponsor of research at the University of Michigan. I'd like to ask both Mr. Walker and Mr. Rogers, continuing on this subject, are there some guidelines that you see for what things, what of our upcoming major engineering developments, what are some of the guidelines for what will be successfully pursued in the under the profit motive, and what will require, if you will, out more or less a majority government manipulation or government sponsorship? I think this must be a key to a lot of the upcoming problems, and I was wondering if both of you have any ideas on the guidelines that you see.
Well, I think essentially the guideline is that the people will get what the people want. Now, this is a slow process many times, but you can see the demand today for cleaning up the highways, cleaning up the air, cleaning up the streams, and I think we're going to get it. And there's a demand for better housing, cleaning up the cities. I think eventually we'll get it. I think we're impatient because it takes so long, but this is one of the penalties, I guess, of being a democracy, that things take a longer time. But I think they're better accepted when the people really want them, and this is a pull rather than a push. And you don't have to sell them. The people already want them, and they will get them. And I have a strong feeling that we're going to find a great deal of our energy devoted in this direction in the next 20 years.
I might amplify on that just a bit and give you my personal judgment, and I could be incorrect, but I'll give you my personal judgment of three areas that I think are going to demand the types of skills, maybe not directly, but in some translatable form, that we that are represented by the Institute. One is housing, and I mean this from the viewpoint of trying to learn how to build safe and sanitary housing much more rapidly, much greater quality, put it where it's needed, reduce the cost of this construction, and talk about the total cost to the owner, whoever he may be, the government or government-assisted or private, over the lifetime of the product. That's one area. This area cries out for smart, professional people. That is not to say that the people in housing now aren't very smart, not very shrewd, but and energetic and tough and competitive, but in addition to that, we need other talents, other skills, other resources. That's one area. I take another area and say it's the area of sophisticated analysis, planning, and management. We're seeing in the cities, in the Model Cities program now, for the first time, the requirements that the elected and appointed officials, working closely with people in the neighborhood, define the problems, define their goals, define the problems that inhibit them in reaching these goals, and begin to assess the resources that they're going to need over some planned period of, say, 5 or 10 years to get there from here. Now, these words must sound very familiar to all of us that have had to do the same thing in the space and in the defense areas. This is going to be, in my judgment, a growing area of national interest and concern. The third, that will bring in more and more professionals, the third, very briefly, what I might call life support services. I had no idea of the fact that most mayors have their backs to the wall as soon as they look at the budget book. You must pay out the money that's required to keep you alive. You must have water. You must rid yourself of waste and so on. You must do that to survive physically. That has to be paid first. And everything else then for social services, whether it's welfare in one end or parks with ponds on the other, comes afterwards. There's a great demand in the public eye for the latter, but he must pay for the former first. And in those areas, I suggest, and we've heard examples given by Cy Herwald, perhaps others, I suggest that the engineering community can do a very great deal indeed.
Any other panelists want to comment before we close up?
Well, I would like to, in closing, thank each of the panelists for coming and really giving us a pretty good discussion on the topic that we aimed at, of where electrical engineering is profession, and around it in all sorts of ways, which we hope we would get. I'd like to thank you all for attending, and thank you.